The stars come out and all that comes is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
Views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
Where did we come from? Why are we here? What lies beyond and what lay before? Is anything certain in life? They say life is too short, the here and the now, and you're only given one shot. But could there be more? Have I lived before? Or could this be be alright, because I believe that after we're gone, the spirit carries on.
And now for a diverse view of life and the afterlife as we begin Understanding Spirit. And now, your host, Alan Cox.
Hello, 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 and welcome once more to Understanding Spirit. It's a bit dull today, but that is life in Great Britain for you. Anyway, it's always good to be here on a Thursday, and I've got a really good special guest, it's Jane Harris. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Alan.
Lovely to have you back on the show. It's been well over 12 months ago, I think, since the last time.
I think it has. It goes in a blur, doesn't it? But yeah, lovely to be back.
That's good. I know lots of things have been going on with you, and you've last year you very kindly asked me to review your book, which I thoroughly enjoyed, and I understand that that's been, it still is, been a success, and that's absolutely brilliant news. But for the one person hiding away in North Korea who hasn't heard about you, would you like to tell us all how your interest and your involvement in the paranormal came about, Jane?
Yes, of course. To be honest, I mean, it was never really anything. I don't think anyone ever thinks to themselves when they're young, you know, oh, I want to be a paranormal investigator, or this is the kind of thing I want to do. It sort of just happens, doesn't it, you know, organically, really. But, I grew up in a house that very much believed in spiritualism, and both of my parents had various experiences seeing ghosts and hearing things. So I suppose I grew up very much a believer anyway. But as I got older, you start to get a bit more curious and a bit more questioning, don't you? And I thought I wanted a bit more than just, the experiences of other people. I wanted to experience something myself. So I started going to spiritualist churches and seeing psychic mediums. And it was all really interesting, but there was still something missing, really. You know, I wanted to get out there and experience something for myself. So...
Did you find that you had support with this with your parents? You know, was this just like a lone thing?
It was pretty much a lone thing. I mean, my parents have always been really supportive, you know. They've never said, don't do anything, you know, if I wanted to do it, as long as that they knew I was sort of in with the right people and keeping myself safe, then I think they were pretty much happy to go along with it, whatever it is. And they still are. They're very supportive. That's good. They don't they're not the kind of people who'd want to come on a paranormal investigation, but they very much believe in an afterlife in the spirit world because they've had so many experiences themselves. So yes, I was very fortunate in that.
Good, good. So from going to the spiritualist church, then you kind of, shall we say, gathered more insight, information to it that made you even more curious, I suppose.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I saw a lot of different types of mediumship, and so, some which didn't convince me too much, and some that did, some that I really thought, you know, wow, that's a really solid piece of information there, you know, that's not just something very general. And then when I was 17, my cousin, who was like my sister really, she was 16, she was killed in a car accident.
Okay.
And so from that moment really, it kind of became more of a big deal for me to really find out if there was anything else. You know, it wasn't just something that I had a bit of an interest in. I suddenly really wanted to know a lot more, and I wanted to try and make some kind of contact if I could. So that was the big catalyst, I suppose, for me. And I think it is for a lot of people, personal experience.
Yes.
It kind of acts as a driving force, doesn't it, for you to want to really understand what's going on, if anything's going on, you know, after this physical world.
So after that tragedy, did you get any messages from the other side, or hasn't that happened?
I have done, not personally, not in recent years. When I was probably about 18 or 19, I visited a psychic medium, and he was one of these guys. He wasn't showy, and he didn't make a big fuss about it, and he, you know, wasn't sort of fame and fortune kind. He was very quiet, and you could tell, actually, I thought he seemed quite troubled by the gift that he had, actually. But he spoke to me, and he told me things that I knew couldn't be a cold reading, basically. He told me things. He said, have you still got the big box with the Cindy dolls in, with all of their shoes missing and clothes missing? And I laughed, because we'd always played with this huge box of just random dolls that I'd know. The outfits were all mismatched and nothing ever worked. But the thing that really made me believe in him, in that he was getting messages from somewhere, was as I was leaving, he said, she's been a bit upset. She's sorry about the mess that the flowers made in your car. She knows you won't get it out, but she thought they were beautiful anyway. She loves the colour orange. And that just really knocked me back, because about a week before, I bought these large oriental lilies, and they were bright orange. I'd never seen anything like them before. And on the way to the cemetery to take them, the pollen had stained my car seat, and I tried everything and couldn't get it out. And I was really disappointed about it, because it was a new car. But for him to say that to me, I knew then that he was getting that from somewhere. And I'd like to believe that he was getting it as a direct message, you know, from spirit.
Right, yeah. So when you say, how did that make you feel then, Jane? You know, I mean, was it a shock, or was it something that you went, okay, yeah, I accept that, and this is, shall we say, how it really is?
Although I'd gone there with the intention and the hope of hearing something as solid as that, I was still shocked, because I think when it's something so specific, you kind of don't have any choice but to believe that, okay, there's more here, there's more going on here than some people think. But I welcomed it. I was so pleased, and it really made me, it validated for me that there is something after. What that something is, I still don't know. I'm not sure, and maybe we're not supposed to know. But it was definitely a good experience for me, and something that sort of kept me going, if you like, at that time, yeah.
Is that where, like, the doll interest came from then?
Well, going to the same spiritualist church that I'd always been to, I hadn't heard anything about these dolls or objects or anything like that. I'd only ever really heard of you know, haunted houses and places like that. So I heard about a lady who went to the same church, and she apparently had this doll that she'd inherited, and it was really old, and she believed that there was something going on with it, that it was causing all kinds of paranormal phenomena in her house. And everybody thought, you know, she's a bit crazy. But I got speaking to her, and she was actually one of the most down-to-earth, sane, I suppose, women that I'd ever met, you know. And she was very matter-of-fact about it. She said, you know, it doesn't scare me. I'll walk in and the TV will be on and I think, oh, she's at it again. And I wanted a bit more than just taking a word from it, although I believed her. And I visited her, and I sat there for a while, and she had this doll on the chair. And the only real reference I'd had to that kind of thing before was, you know, films, so Chucky and Child's Play and all that kind of thing. Yeah. So you have all these weird ideas when somebody says that it's a doll, that it's just something, a work of fiction, something from Hollywood. But actually, the more I learned about it after, and the more people I spoke to and realised it's not just dolls, it can be anything really, anything that's meant something to someone can absorb some kind of energy, and that can be replayed. I thought, well, yeah, it makes sense. It makes as much sense as a haunted house. And I think if you believe in one, it's not too far a stretch to believe in the other.
No, that's true. That's very true. Because, I mean, in the work that Anne and I do, you know, we can find these, whatever you call it, demons, bad energies, whatever you want to call them. You can find them actually in people. You can find them actually in inanimate objects. So, in a sense, yeah, of course they can be in dolls. Yeah, of course they can.
Yeah, it's no different. I think the idea of dolls is, it can be taken quite lightheartedly because of the films, you know, it's quite amusing, isn't it, when you think of Chucky running round.
Yeah.
But in reality, you don't get anything as dramatic and amazing as that. You know, these dolls aren't going to jump up and start dancing. But that doesn't mean that there isn't someone's energy still around them.
That's right. That's right. So how did it start? Because I know that you get people get in touch with you who, shall we say, it scares them, they're worried and what have you, and you help them. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, I started doing a bit of research, this is years ago, about 17 years ago, and you couldn't really just jump on the internet. So it was libraries and books and word of mouth. And the more I spoke to people, the more stories I started hearing. You know, people say, oh yes, I inherited that pocket watch from my granddad, and you know, it was never right in our house after, and they'd tell you bits and pieces. And so gradually it was more of a word of mouth thing than anything else. And the more people I visited, the more they'd say, you know, I've spoke to my sister and she's got something that's not quite right going on. I just wonder if you'd go and have a look. And that's how these things kind of happen, really. It snowballs, doesn't it?
That's right. It does.
But it's, yeah, I mean, word of mouth initially years ago, and then we sort of hit the internet and set up social media, and the rest is history, I suppose.
Well, I mean, if you actually think about it, you know, social media, it can be an incredible tool, really. I mean, just like Skype, and we're talking through Skype now and broadcasting to literally the world. And it's amazing place for people to come onto if they're looking for help. I know they've got to be careful, you get the wrong kind of people out there to take advantage, but it has actually made life in some way easier for people.
Yes, I agree, yeah. And I think even 20, 30 years ago, people didn't really speak about the paranormal in the way that they do now. So if someone did believe that there was something going on in their home, they probably wouldn't say anything to anyone. They'd just end up thinking they were going mad.
That's right.
And then, of course, that makes the situation a lot worse, doesn't it? Because whatever's in the home, if it's just trying to get through and get a message across, it can get frustrated, and then activity appears to be quite scary when actually it's just, you know, trying to get attention. That's so right. I think there's a lot of good points to social media. There's a, like you say, there's a lot of bad as well. But I think with anything, you're going to get a small element of that. But overall, I think it's really helped raise people's awareness and raise people's understanding and given us all a platform to talk about it more openly, hasn't it?
So I know from the last time that you say that, you know, you can take these dolls and that away from the person's house, and then you've got, is it like a basement or a cellar that you take them to? Is that correct?
Yeah, well, our cellar here is the area we use. It sounds quite macabre and sinister, but it's it's actually more out of practicality. Than
have,
it,
you, have you thought, you know, about making a motion picture, Dan?
No. Oh, no. No, we've got far too many other bits and bobs, camping tents and all sorts, you know, at one end. So, no, it wouldn't make for a very good film set.
So, okay. Fair.
No, I mean, the one area we use, it's, like I say, it's more practical. We've got children, so they don't run around down there and nothing gets disturbed. And
yes,
we can try to, as much as possible, isolate a little section so that we can do whatever work we need to. And it can take months, it can take years. Sometimes we never really get anything substantial. But we tend to do the majority of the work in people's homes with them.
So I'm sorry, Jane. Now, I'm just fascinated by this. So if you're not able to help somebody in the home and you do take the doll away and you put them down, okay, it happens to be a basement. I know it just sounds like, you know, as you say, a bit eerie, but okay, you put them in the basement. So what do you then try to achieve then with the doll or the dolls?
Initially, we'll try to establish whether anything's going on, or should I say establish whether there's anything that we can't explain in simple, rational terms. So normally we'd put it in a cabinet so that there's as little external influence as possible. So anything, you know, breezes coming through the basement or anything like that, they can't affect the temperature within there, not to such a degree anyway, maybe 1 or 2 degrees, but nothing really. Yeah. We'll put thermometers in there, we'll set up some motion detectors, we'll put maybe a night vision camera on, and basically do anything that we can, anything that you would do in someone's home, I suppose, when you're looking for paranormal phenomena or anything that you can't explain. And we'll do that, and we'll do that for as long as it takes. Sometimes we'll call in psychic mediums, we'll have seances, we'll try to see if there's anything that that wants to communicate with us. As I say, a lot of the time there isn't, but sometimes there is. And it's not just dolls, you know, it can be anything. We've had a wedding ring here that seemed to really hold some strong residual energy, right, from the previous owner. And I think really that makes sense, even in terms of physics, doesn't it? You know, you wear something every day. Our energy can't be destroyed, so it's absorbed.
When you say previous owner, is it somebody who's got divorced or somebody who's passed on? Or
It was someone that had passed on, that passed away wearing their ring.
Right.
And the daughter had it, and she felt very strongly that things that were going on in her home were because her father couldn't pass over, and the ring was actually the thing, the main conductor, if you like. It was the main connection she still had to him.
Right.
It's fascinating, really.
Yeah, because as you say, our energies that they do stay there. It's like when you walk into a room, and even if you weren't aware, shall we say, there'd been an argument, and you walk in and the people, you know, they switch over to, oh, hello to see you and lovely to see you and all that. You kind of know, don't you? It's like a... It's just like that's what happens.
You do. It feels heavy, doesn't it? The atmosphere, the energy in the room, it can feel very heavy. And actually, I've been researching a theory at the moment which looks at various telepathic interactions, and the idea that everything on Earth has got its own energy field, and that maybe all of our individual energy fields can overlap and interact, and that's possibly where sometimes we get information from, you know, and we don't necessarily know where it's came from, but it turns out to be correct.
So do these dolls then, I mean, have you got all of them that you've ever collected off people, or, you know, or what happens to them?
We haven't got all of them. We've got quite a few. I mean, there isn't really a lot you can do with them. Ones that don't turn out to have any kind of attachments or energy or anything, they get donated to different charities, just regular dolls or regular, you know, paintings or whatever. We normally end up with quite a few things every couple of months that we just go and take and donate.
Because
the things...
I was going to say, because what happens is, I would imagine, the people who have thought that there's something there, they wouldn't want it back, because it would be still in their mind that there could be. It's a psychological thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. A lot of the time, if it's a connection that's personal, so if it's a relative, then of course people will want them back, and all they want us to do is kind of validate that they're not going mad and that something has absorbed their father's or the grandfather's energy, and they'll keep it, and it's quite comforting actually in that respect. But no, not always. A lot of people are very much just take it away, and whatever you find out, I don't want to know. You know,
yeah.
So that's fair enough as well. It's not everybody's cup of tea, is it?
Well, no, you know, because normally people who look for help, it's because it is bothering them. It could be frightening them or frightening somebody else in the family, in the house, and it's the fear of the unknown. So not everybody understands and realizes that, you know, that in a strange way they won't hurt them, but I think it's the fear that can bring on things happening, and then they'll associate it to whatever object it is.
That's right, yeah. I think our minds are a very powerful tool, aren't they? And we don't really know exactly what 100% of our brain and our mind can do. And, yeah, if we're living in a fearful situation, if we're scaring ourselves silly, then, you know, we can be bringing on negative things unknowingly.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'll tell you what, Jane, let's take a break, okay? And then when we come back, perhaps we can talk a bit about your book. So we've got Cliff Richard and the Drifters' Living Doll. Thought you liked that.
Brilliant.
Got myself a crying, talking, sleeping, walking, living doll. Got to do my best to please her just 'cause she's a living doll. Got a roving eye, and that is why she satisfies my soul. Got the one and only walking, talking, living doll. Well, take a look at her hair, it's real, and don't believe what I say, just feel. Lock her up in a trunk so no big hunk can steal her away from me. Got myself a crying, talking, sleeping, walking, living doll. Got to do my best to please her just 'cause she's a living doll. Got her own eye, and that is why she satisfies my soul. Got the one and only walking, talking, living doll. Look at her hair, it's real, and don't believe
say just feel. Lock her up in a trunk so no big hug can steal her away from me. Got myself a crying, talking, sleeping, walking, living doll. Got to do my best to please her, just cause she's a living doll. Got her open eye and that is why she satisfies my soul. Got the one and only walking, talking, living doll.
Some music to move your soul? Then sit down, put your feet up, and start rocking with Doc. Yeah, hey. Check the schedule for airtime. That's Rocking with Doc with your host, Dr. Dave, only on the Paramania Radio Network.
We had a little bit of a gap there because Dr. Dave... He wasn't ready. How dare him keep me waiting a few seconds. Anyway, I'm talking to Jane Harris, and you said that the song I just played, right, Tongue in Cheek, but actually it's very relevant to what you want to actually talk about now, Jane. So
it is, yes, it's almost like you knew, Alan, that's your psychic abilities coming through there, I think.
It's something like that.
Yeah, well, you mentioned my first book at the beginning of the show, and yeah, What Dwells Within, that's done very well. It was a great book, which I co-wrote with Dan Weatherer. We really enjoyed doing it because we knew it would be a good opener, a good sort of easy road into the whole area of haunted objects for people who didn't know anything about them. As happens often with fate, as I'd finished the book and it had been sent away to the publishers, we had the most intriguing case of my career come to us. That was in the September of 2014.
Right.
And that was with Peggy, the doll, which we still have, and we're still trying to get our heads around, to be honest. But the more we study and the more we investigate what's going on, the more questions we've got than anything else. But yes, my second book that I've been writing for about a year, it's nearly finished. But because it's all about that case, it's all about Peggy and people's experiences with her and our experiences, it just keeps growing, you know, because more keeps happening. And just when I'm at a point where I think, right, I can finish here, someone will get in touch and there's been something so intriguing go on that I need to add it in. So... It's been snowballing for, like I say, 12 months, but it's nearly finished, and hopefully in the next few months that'll be out there for people who are interested in her.
Now, Peggy the doll, right? Is it the case that she's been passed around to other people, or is this other people in the same family having the same different problems?
We've been to a few gatherings, I suppose. So we went along to a psychic medium who had some beginners who were just starting on their spiritual path, and we went to a group seance, and some strange things happened there which I've included, but no, it's people contacting me mainly, Alan, who've had weird experiences, normally physically, so palpitations, headaches, nausea. Their pets have been behaving really strangely after seeing videos or photos of this dog.
Right, okay.
And especially something that I've had to do quite a bit of research on for the book is around animals, around dogs and their reaction, not only in this case, but generally to things in the paranormal world.
Yes.
Because we had a lady from America contact us. She wasn't the first person to get in touch about it. She was about the fifth or sixth person, but her dog, she was reading all about this case with Peggy, the doll, and... her dog was with her and had a seizure. And she didn't put two and two together, of course, you wouldn't, but took her to the vets, and there was nothing, the vet couldn't find any cause for it. And the dog was fine, and then about a month or two later, she was watching a video with me and Peggy, the doll, on, and the dog was sat next to her and had another seizure, and unfortunately it was a fatal one. And this lady was obviously devastated and couldn't understand, but couldn't deny that there seemed to be some kind of strange coincidence. And for us, we'd had other people get in touch saying, what's going on? My dog's running around in circles, they're cowering in the corner, all kinds of weird things, purely because they've had a photo of this doll up on their phone or on the computer, and they've said to us that it hasn't stopped until they've taken the photo away, you know, turned it off. So although we don't understand it, we know that animals can have a sixth sense and can pick up on things. What they're picking up on, we don't know, but
it's
fascinating.
Yeah, it is. On a personal note, going back quite a few years ago now, went to this man's house, it was a rescued dog, but he'd had him quite a few years. And it suddenly turned nasty and started to go to bite people. And he'd even gone to bite his owner. And long story short, we went there and he'd locked him in the bedroom. He said, I can't dare let him out, Alan. He said, because he'll bite you. And it must have been my guides, obviously it wasn't my guides, saying, no, going in, Alan. So I opened the door and the dog was at the back of the bedroom against the wall, sees me and he's growling, snarling, showing his teeth. And I walked towards him and I got my pendulum dowser and cleared him, and he stopped growling and snarling that. Anyway, finished the clearing, and the guy needed some healing on his leg, so we went downstairs, put my hand on the fella's knee, and the dog come along and put his paw on my hand to heal him. And it was like how he used to be, you know. And this dog was obviously possessed, you know, and it turned back to how he really was, you know. So actually had proof in front of our eyes, you know, that these things happen, you know, they happen. And but that was lovely, the fact that he knew, that the guy knew there was something wrong, because, you know, he'd had the dog about 4 or 5 years, and then literally it suddenly changed. And it was bizarre how he found out about me, because I went to do some readings between the Christmas and the New Year in a house in Wolverhampton. And when this man sat down for his reading, I always taped the days when, you know, it was like a cassette player, and I'd always tape it and say I was giving the reading to him, play it back to make sure it recorded, and my voice had altered completely. It was like on the recording, it was very demonic. And the guy looked at me, he says, you know, he says, it's into reading, is it? I says, no, it isn't. I said, what's going on? And then he told me, and we went to his house. So, you know, these things, I think, are clever, but they, how can you put it, they give themselves up in a way, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? And I don't think people... It's easy to brush things to one side, but we need to look at these clues, don't we? You know, these signs, these little things, and because that can be the whole reason for two people meeting, can't they? You know, if he'd have just brushed it aside, or you'd just brushed it aside, you'd have never gone to his house to help him, would you?
Exactly. But I also think good spirit has the part in playing it, in getting people in the right place at the right time, so somebody gets helped. I do believe that, you know, that happens.
Yes. I believe that as well. I mean, the only time really, in my experience, that I think possibly we might have been in the presence of something demonic or something dark was when we went to a house and they'd been using a Ouija board. They weren't experienced in using one. They weren't really experienced in using anything, but they had 5 children in the house. And so, for me, you know, as a mother anyway, I just found it completely bizarre that they'd even entertained that. But then, you know, we all do our own things, don't we? And we've all got our own beliefs. But I think they were curious more than anything. They'd had a few things going on in the house and decided that the best way to try and make contact with whatever it was to use a Ouija board. But unfortunately, they'd never used one before. And obviously, they'd invited something or given something more energy.
Yes.
And of course, then, whether they were using the board or not, the thing that they'd invited was still around them all the time. So, it's a real thing, and it's not something to be messed around with, is it?
No, I've never wanted to and never will mess with a Ouija board, because if you really don't know how to protect yourself and that, it's a sure way of getting bad energies through. Because you're opening up to complete spirit world, good and bad, and you've got no way of knowing who or what is coming through.
That's right. And people say, I mean, I've always said the same, and some people say to me, well, why is it any different than, you know, a pendulum or anything else? And I suppose in a lot of practical terms, it doesn't appear that different, but for whatever reason, it is. It just acts as almost like a red rag to a bull, doesn't it? You know,
yes.
You get the Ouija board out, and suddenly, whether it's because that they are one of the strongest ways of communicating with the spirit world, I don't know, but they do work, and they can definitely, like you say, tap into something not quite so nice.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. So, with your first book, give people a little bit of a taster what it's about, because okay, you say the book's doing well, but there's probably some other people out there who think, oh, I'll order that, I'll get that.
Yeah, it covers our most memorable case studies, really. So over, I think it's been about 18 years we've been doing this now. We've had quite a few interesting experiences. Some that have just turned out not to be paranormal, you know, we've explained it another way, but others which have really left us in no doubt that we've definitely been dealing with something paranormal, and those are the ones that are in the book. Experiences with different items. About 10 years ago, we held a group session, and at that time we did use a board. And it's part of the reason that I just don't go near them anymore, because I had a really frightening experience with one. And that's detailed in there. There's a bit of a historical section which talks about cultural references to haunted objects. The Japanese, for example, have always, for thousands of years, used puppetry in their sort of sideshows and in their culture.
Yes.
And one of their superstitious beliefs is that at the end of a show you should always take your puppets apart, and you should never keep the heads and the legs and the arms and the body together, because when you're not looking, demonic forces could possess them and use them for evil means. So there's little interesting snippets like that people probably aren't aware of, that the whole idea of haunted objects it's not restricted to just the UK or America. It's all over the world in different pockets of time and different cultures. I'll give a bit of a background to me and how it all started. A bit of advice for anyone who wants to work in this, you know, in the paranormal field, be a paranormal investigator. So it's not a heavy book, it's not too big, it doesn't go too in depth, but they're good, short, quick chapters, each on different cases. So
I thoroughly enjoyed it when you very kindly asked me to review it. And
thank you.
No, that's all right. No, it's a really good book. It was. That's it, you see. If somebody's having experiences or they're interested, it's better to be, shall we say, forewarned in a sense, if you want to, or have some knowledge of, because it's just the fear of things happening and not understanding is the worst. And these energies are there all the time. It's just that at night time it always seems more apparent, simply because we always feel more threatened when it's night time. Even in the winter, and it gets dark at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, although it's still in a sense the day, you start to feel more threatened, even in just everyday life, don't you?
That's right. You feel more vulnerable, don't you? Because one of your main senses, it's knocked down a notch or two, isn't it, in the dark? So
that's right.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people say to me, why do paranormal investigators have to, you know, be in the dark and torches and all this kind of thing? And it's not to psychologically scare ourselves or psych ourselves out. I do believe it is because when one of your senses is knocked down a couple of pegs, then your others seem to heighten, don't they? So you're more likely to hear things, sense things,
less distraction in everyday life, I suppose.
That's it.
You know,
yes.
But strangely enough, when I go to do clearings, that I always go in the daytime and never go at night. So, yeah, because
it makes no difference, does it, to the spirit world? They don't care if it's in daytime, nighttime, but
they don't.
They're there all the time.
Yeah. So, your husband, he shares your interest as well.
Yes, fortunately for me, when we met, one of the first things we talked about was ghosts and ghost stories, and I found out that he's got about 200 different ghost books on, you know, local Black Country ghosts and Worcestershire ghosts and Edinburgh ghosts. So he's always been quite well read and quite interested in the subject. I suppose he's a little bit more sceptical than me, simply because he's never really experienced anything himself. Nothing that he hasn't sort of still been on the fence a little bit about. That's good. It keeps it quite balanced, you know, and we have these debates, whether we're in the car or sitting at home or whatever, and we'll sort of debate what we think about certain things, and it keeps it interesting.
Well, let's take a break now, and then when we come back, I know there's something else that you want to talk about. It's Hello Dolly, Louis Armstrong.
Hello, Dolly, this is Louis. Dolly, it's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, Dolly. I can tell, darling, you still growing, you still going strong. I feel the room sway, but the band's playing one of our old favorite songs from way back when. So take a rap, fellas, find an empty lap, fellas.
Want to learn about how paranormal investigators use technology, what we use, and how it works? Then check out Tech Time with Brock and Doc every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific only on the Paramania Radio Network.
Welcome back to Understanding Spirit. I'm Alan Cox, your host. If you want to know more about me, check me out at www.calmingthoughts.com. And my very special guest is Jane Harris. Hello, Jane. You're still there?
I am still here, yes. Thanks, Alan.
That's good. Okay. That's what I'll be talking to myself.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I understand that you're in the process of putting a documentary together. Would you... that sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yes, well, it's something a little bit different for us, really, and I suppose it's a bit of a personal venture, because it's all about a murder mystery that happened 70-odd years ago now, quite locally to us in Hagley, near Stourbridge.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time it became famous, it was known as Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm. And the reason for that, what basically happened in the 1940s, 1943 actually, four teenage boys from Stourbridge were just playing in the woods. They were poaching in Hagley Woods.
Yeah, I know it, yeah.
Yeah, they shouldn't have been there because it's private land. That's actually, right. Part of Hagley Hall estate, but there you go, there they were.
Yeah.
And they found a large, hollow witch elm tree. And one of them climbed in thinking that they'd find birds' nests. But what they found was actually a skull. And then the more they looked, that there was actually a full skeleton in there. Well, I say full, it had one of the hands missing, and the hand was actually found buried close by. And that's what added to the curiosity, really, because at the time police, and then still can't, identify who this woman was. That they found fragments of clothing, they found a wedding ring and shoes and bits and pieces, but she was never identified. Some people believed it was a ritualistic killing, part right. of witchcraft, you know, and the hand was hand of glory and all the rest of that. But the stronger theory actually is looking like it was something to do with Nazi espionage. She had no labels in any of her clothes, and there were people who mentioned a lady called Bella who'd gone missing, who'd been a Dutch agent. But it's fascinating. There are so many different layers to it. But we decided to look into it not only from the historical point of view, but also from a paranormal point of view. Because actually, to our knowledge anyway, over the last 70-odd years, no one's ever been to the site and tried to conduct any form of paranormal investigation or anything spiritual at all.
Right.
And I personally believe that if someone dies in quite tragic circumstances in the way that this woman did, it's not too far a stretch to believe that her soul won't be at rest. And especially because she's never been identified. You know, no one knows who the murderer was and no one knows who she was. So we're speaking to different experts. We spoke to Ashley Mortimer, who's the director for the Centre of Pagan Studies.
Yes, I know.
About the witchcraft theory, and he gave us a fascinating insight into Wicca generally and witchcraft and the practices. We're looking at the moment to speak to someone with some good local World War II history, have a chat about.
So they have actually pinpointed it down to Second World War time.
Yes, well, she was found in 1943, right. And the pathologist's report said that she died somewhere within the previous 18 months. So around 1941, they think it happened.
Yeah.
There were some various sightings. There were a couple of Home Guard officers who were patrolling that area in 1941. And at one point, they were called to investigate a parachute alert on the Clent Hills. They did. They didn't find anyone, but they found the parachute harness. The silk had been removed. People probably using that to make underwear or whatever at the time. But the harness was there, so they know that someone was parachuted in. But never found. And there were other sort of little sightings that if you kind of piece it together, it could maybe come to something. But yes, we're looking to speak to anyone, either a local historian or someone who remembers the crime or remembers hearing their parents speak about the crime. Anyone that might know anything that can help us put a few more pieces of the puzzle together, that would be great.
So Have you any idea when this will be complete? You know, have you got a time frame?
We had initially, as these things always go, we hoped it would be finished July. It shouldn't be too much later than that, but it may be August or September now. It's about halfway there, and the final part will mainly be the investigation itself. We're going to film that. We've got a lady from the Express and Star coming along with us on that as well. She's really interested to experience that. So that'll probably take up a good chunk of the conclusion. So we're almost there.
Yeah. It'd be really good if could actually, from the investigation, you could actually find out who the woman was.
It'd be amazing. I mean, there are theories of a cover-up, because MI5 did get involved in the 50s. And if we could examine the body now and subject it to DNA testing, we'd know who she was. But unfortunately, the body was donated to Birmingham Medical School and has since gone missing. So the notes have gone missing as well. There's no trace of the notes, the original pathologist reports. So there's a lot of things that back up the spy theory.
I was just going to say, that sounds very much like our secret services have been at work there, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does make you wonder, doesn't it? Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, because but with the Freedom of Information Act, after 30 years, that it can be told, for what reason? It makes you wonder what reason they would actually get rid of all of that, you know, because it's of no use to anybody now. And if it was locked away and that at the time, after it was taken to Birmingham University, nobody would be getting hold of it anyway. So it does give the conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it's not likely anyone could be brought to justice now anyway. I'd say the murderer's probably long since passed away, maybe. But, you know, it's fascinating. I mean, if we could get anything through the paranormal investigation, whether it be words or a name or a date or something that linked to factual information that we already have, that would be amazing.
Yeah, indeed.
Just purely from a spiritual point of view, if this poor woman's soul is still there, she's been there a long time and she needs to be helped to cross over.
That's right. Yeah, but I mean, and for all we know, she's probably trying to make contact, isn't she? I mean, it's a strange one. And also, it's amazing that those boys were there where they shouldn't have been. What are the chances of them going into that particular, finding that tree and going into the tree?
It's a massive area, you know, Hackleywood, so you're right. What are the chances?
Well, they'd probably find that spirit led them there, trying to bring justice to the woman.
But yes, I can quite believe it, yeah. Unfortunately, we need spirit to help us with a few more clues now.
Yeah, indeed. So you've certainly got a lot going on there. Do you find that the more that you get involved with the paranormal, the more that you want to know more and more, type of thing?
Oh yes, definitely. I think because naturally you meet more and more people and you hear different explanations for things and you hear different experiences and people's own take on things, and it can make you kind of re-question your own beliefs a little bit, or your own experiences, you know, something that originally you might not have thought was anything. You can speak to a few other people who've had the exact same thing happen and then you start to wonder. So, definitely, it's endlessly fascinating, and the longer you learn about it and the longer you experience it, you learn new things. There's all kinds of different theories coming out all the time, isn't there, about the nature of ghosts and spirits.
That's
right. And paranormal experiences.
So what I find the amazing thing is, you know, and I understand people being sceptical, totally understand it, but if you research into it, like you mentioned some time ago, different cultures, different societies from all over the world, even long before there was internet and travel to other countries and other ways, going back hundreds of years, we find in their documented history there is literally the same kind of experiences that we have in our country, the Western civilization. It happens in the third world countries. So why people find it hard to believe that there isn't an afterlife or another life there is strange, because it's so documented everywhere across the globe.
It is. I mean, there's evidence that the ancient Greeks were dowsing. You know, the tablets have been found with sort of their version of letters around, almost like a Ouija board, really, but with the hole where they think a stick would have been put for a pendulum to hang, you know, a stone on a piece of thread. So, it's not a new thing. I think what is new is science. And unfortunately, some people seem to think that science and spiritualism need to stay separate and they can't go hand in hand. And it's not my view at all. I think, if anything, one needs the other, because without science, of course, we can't fully understand anything that's going on in the natural world. But at the same time, if you just come at everything from a purely scientific angle, you're blocking down a lot of your own abilities and your own understanding. So I think some people can get too bogged down with the science of it all. I don't think some things are meant to be explained by science. Some things are beyond science.
Well, the strange thing is, though, you know, what you say with science, is that the very intelligent people who have put their, and I say, this is how the world began, and this happened and that happened, and then years and years later, doubt is thrown into it, but at the time it said, well, this is it and this is gospel, and the truth of the matter is it isn't. No, everything can't be explained away by science.
No, definitely not. You can't explain experiences, you know, deja vu, for example, when it's so strong that you even know. I went somewhere years ago and I'd never been there before, at least not in this life, but while I was there, I knew it was a little village and I knew where to turn. I knew what was down one road, I knew what was down another road, I knew that if I went over the bridge there was a little park, and it's things that you just can't explain. And I know maybe science might say, well, it was in my subconscious because I'd read about it somewhere, or, you know, I'd seen it on TV, but I thought of all the different possibilities and I'm convinced that I hadn't. So you can't always explain those kind of experiences scientifically.
No, I can remember when I was about 14 or 15, and I got on holiday with my mum and dad, and we was in Devon. And I don't even know the name of the place now, but I know my dad was really keen on seeing this house. It was like a tourist attraction. And it got a long drive that bent round with trees on the one side so you couldn't see the house. And I started to say what the house looked like. And my mum and dad looked at me and said, well, what are you on about? And when we came into view, it was exactly as I described it. And I'd even described the furniture inside. And they looked at me incredulously. And I still to this day don't know what the house was. I mean, it was only, a young teen. Well, I think I was about 12 or 13, something like that. And so there are things that you can't explain. As you say, some expert would try and say, well, it was talked about by your mum and dad first, mm-hmm. and things like that, you know, but you can only go by your own senses, can't you?
Yes, of course. I think it's a good thing that science is more and more interested in the paranormal, because hopefully, eventually, there will be something that happens that even the scientists can't ignore. And so the more that they do their research on it, and the more that they come up with various theories about it, hopefully the closer we'll get to actually proving that there's something else. Yes. There'll always be a little slither of doubt, I suppose, for people who've never had a paranormal experience. Because sometimes you just have to experience things for yourself to really know what's going on. But I think generally speaking, the whole area of the paranormal and spiritualism is much more accepted now, isn't it? Much better understood.
It is.
When I was speaking to Ashley Mortimer, he now sits on the panel, for the school governors and represents paganism as a religion. So much more recognised than it used to be. I mean, going back to the Witch Elm case, in those days, in the 40s and 50s, if you were practising anything like that, witchcraft, Wicca, it was you were immediately under suspicion.
Yes.
Because it just wasn't understood.
Believe it or not, Jane, we are out of time. Quite incredible. Mm-hmm. The hour has gone so quickly. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I hope you have as well.
I have, Alan. Yes, it's been lovely. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. So until the next time, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Why are we here? Where do we go when we die? What lies beyond? And what lay before? Is anything certain in life? They say life is too short, the here and the now, and you're only given one shot. But could there be more? Have I lived before? Or could this be all that we've got? If I died tomorrow, I'd be alright, because I believe that after we're gone, the spirit carries on.
Thank you for listening to Understanding Spirit. Tune in next week, Thursday, at 9 p.m. British Summer Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, here on the Paramania Radio Network.